Today, January the 27th, Monday, was the day for the Queen of Greece. In the morning, a little work, and then getting dressed up, and that is when it begins to dawn on me that I really don't have any new clothes. And then, about 5 or 10 minutes of one, out on the front portico, to meet that beautiful woman, that extremely capable, assured career queen, Frederica of Greece, with her daughter, Princess Irene. The handsome ambassador from their country, Mr. Matsis, was on hand. He's the sort of man that looks, you'd like to know better. We went upstairs to the yellow room with only a very small group. Mrs. Carolou, the grand mistress of the court, two or three more members of the Greek party, Chief Justice and Mrs. Warren, who are always on hand, bless their hearts, and the balls. The Queen is always one who gets right down to what the State Department calls substantive conversation, and so I could overhear her saying to Lyndon something about Cyprus, 40 miles straight between there and Turkey, can get there in a motorboat. If anybody comes across, if there's any shooting, it'll be all over. Our soldiers will start moving. But if we can be assured that they won't bother us, we'll take the bishop by the beard. Actually, she said that. And the watchword is, if they move. So it's all a sort of a powder keg in which the least match could set off a conflagration. She has beauty, jewelry, brains, humor. She is also something of a firebrand. She might be difficult for the politicians of her country to deal with, but she's somebody who works at her job, and I admire her tremendously. After a drink, and after the presentation of presents, and incidentally, one never gets to finish those drinks one has up there, we went down the stairs, Lyndon escorting the Queen, and I came with the Princess and with Lindebird, stood at the bottom of the steps and had our pictures taken. And at least I fared pretty well in those, I think. And then, this time, not to the tune of Hail to the Chief, because it was not a state occasion, we continued on into the East Room, to the receiving line. I may be the only living human being who enjoys a receiving line, but if it's the only contact that I have with the people who have invited to the house, our house for the time being, it's my moment to express a little friendship, a little pleasure, interest, and so I do enjoy it. From the Senate, there were the Fulbrights, the Sparkmans, the Symingtons, the Harrison Williams, almost the first time I think I've seen his wife down here, and Maureen Newberger. And standing in for Rusk, there was George Ball. From the House, the Albert Thomases and the Peter Frelinghuysens, looking like 10 generations of aristocrats had produced him. And thank goodness I had a moment to tell him how lovely I thought Blair House was. And young John Bradamus, with whom we've been on some pleasant weekends. I was so happy to have Walter Jenkins there from our office, and I hope it was at least an hour's respite from the turmoil he's living in now, and sweet little Marie Famer. And then, how strange that the first person from my hometown of Marshall, Texas, should be Dr. and Mrs. Thomas W. Cole, the president of Wiley College, a Negro. Of course, the guest list was heavily loaded with Greeks who have made a success in this country, who have contributed to the bloodstream of its culture, its business, its achievements, most of whom I didn't know. Dr. Comenduras, who is co-founder of Medico. Mr. and Ms. Plumides, he's the president of the American Hellenic Educational Progressive Association. Several Greek journalists, Greek bank presidents, Greek educators, Greek publishers. I think Elia Kazan must be a Greek, too, and I did so want one more minute to discuss with him, having seen After the Fall last week in New York. To me, it was almost the most fun of all to have the Greeks I've known longest, George and Helen Vernas, at whose country place I've spent so many happy summer afternoons. And then from home, that we had the Alfred Negleys, who stayed on and spent the night with us. And a Greek party wouldn't be complete without Drew Pearson, that great traveler, and Louvi, of whom I'm becoming so fond. Mrs. Charles Lindbergh was there, because she's going to write a story about me, perhaps, and we thought it would be a good opportunity for her to see how the house runs now that I'm here. But without a doubt, the most noticed Greek was one of simple origin and simple achievements, Mr. and Mrs. John Gavatos of Corpus Christi, Texas, because in the middle of the seated dinner, he got up, walked over, leaned over the Queen's chair and over Lyndon's chair, and chatted with them, telling them how he and his wife were married on the very same day that the Queen and her husband were married, and how their child was born on the very same day, or just practically that, and how he, when he had known Lyndon, 35 years ago in Corpus Christi, had predicted that one day he would be President of the United States. We certainly made Betty Beale happy, I think, by having her seated next to Adlai Stevenson, although she did have some heavy competition with Mrs. Lindbergh. And it was a particularly nice time to have Blake Clark, who is really a Greek, Dina, the last name is unpronounceable, on whose TV program I had appeared once in my description of my trip to Greece. I think perhaps the most relaxed and easy TV program I ever did. This is the first time Linda Bird has been present at a state occasion. In fact, at any important occasion since we've been here, she was seated next to the princess. She doesn't say much about enjoying it. I hope she does. To me, it seems such a marvelous opportunity. With dessert, I got up and said my few words of introduction of Lewis Hunt and Earl Wrightson, and they wandered among the tables singing a medley of songs, gee, a bit of Puccini opera, a sort of a tour, a musical tour of the American theater, which was utterly delightful, except that perhaps it kept our busy guests a little bit too late, since lunch ended at 3 o'clock. One of the most interesting guests was Mrs. Aline Saarinen, wife of the great architect, and I just wished, that's always one's greatest regret at these big affairs like this, that you don't have time to sit down and absorb each individual. I wished I could have sat down and have listened to her talk. Lyndon's toast was charming and true and adequate, because so much that we are goes back to a little Greek town of several thousand years ago. And the Queen rather stole the show, because she was a wit, and she said that we had, the Delphic Oracle must have left their country and come to ours, since John Gavatos was predicting that Lyndon would someday be president. When I had bid the last guest goodbye a little bit past 3, I went upstairs to the Queen's sitting room. I have found that's the quietest place, the one least likely to be interrupted in, and had a couple of hours with Mrs. Lindbergh. It had only been planned to occupy about 1 hour, but because I liked listening and talking to her, I myself rather prolonged it. I was interested in such a diversity between her books, Gift of the Sea, which was so introspective and delicate and sort of an essay and purely intellectual, and then her book, Dearly Beloved, which was, it had some humor and it had some bitterness, and human beings lived pretty rough lives in it, pretty painful lives at any rate, and she, well, that they should both come out of the same mind intrigued me. I haven't the vaguest idea whether she'll ever write one line on me, and don't care, but I'm glad to have spent some time with her. It was interrupted in order to run down to the southwest portico and meet Warren Lynn and throw my arms around her and hug her and say, come in and help us run this place, dear. and Linda Bird was down there, and naturally, Linda Bird's unfriends, the photographers. Then after Mrs. Lindbergh left, back to the desk to work until about 7:30, when I got in touch with Nancy and Alfred, who were spending the night upstairs. And then we had drinks, and we walked, and we talked, and we planned. And I think I've got somebody who might do my needlepoint for me. And she gave me the most adorable owl that looks like he might have come straight from Athena's shield. Then Lyndon asked us to join him in the pool. By that time, it was about 9 o'clock. It never bodes well when we have such a late dinner, because that always means it's been an harassing day, a day of disappointments and failures and troubles. So we went over and went for a swim with him, and it had been a bad day. Cyprus and Panama and a few troubles in Texas don't all mix up to make a cream puff of a life. We had dinner about 10:30, and the Matheses came over and joined us for coffee. And then we went down and saw a very brief movie about the presidency. And finally, everybody at long last to bed. Sandwiched in with the day, and herein lies the crux of my dilemma, because it is sandwiched, was a little talk with Lucy, during which she showed me a little Kodak picture of a sign in Maiden Rock, Wisconsin, stretched across the street, and probably Maiden Rock is the size of Johnson City, was a sign that says, "Welcome, Lucy, to Maiden Rock." She also described every member of Jack's family, and she has a sort of regard for Jack's mother that I think I'd sort of be happy if she had for me. And then a little talk with Linda, in which she told me about her some more about her walks each night. It seemed that the night before she had walked all the way to the Capitol and back. It's obvious I'm not going to win the battle to keep us all close together unless I apply more time to it than I do to the press, to my public duties, to Lyndon's business.